When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
News team, assemble!
It's back and bigger than ever. It's the unofficial 40 from Soonerscoop.com. Now, here's the entire Soonerscoop crew: Carrie, Josh, Eddie, and Bob.
All right, welcome back. It is another edition of the Unofficial 40 Podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Murdoch, alongside my co-host, Eddie Radosovich, Josh McQuistian, and Bob Prisbillo. It is week number 9 of the OU football season, and let me tell you, we are all hearing it, feeling it, I should say, as the Sooners definitely are coming off of a Kansas disappointment. Josh joined us on the post-game pod even. I mean, that's Eddie got almost kicked out of a press box. It's been quite a week, fellas. We heard from Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch yesterday, and I know a lot of people wanted to hear them basically kick people off the team, but it didn't happen. Kept the positive vibe going, which only angers many, I understand. But Bob, let's start with you, because you were at the Kansas game. I had to write about that disaster.
I mean, it's just sleepwalking is almost an understatement for what the heck happened there in the first half. And I guess you sort of heard Lincoln try to explain it a little bit yesterday. Like, the young players have to learn that you're going to get every team's best, no matter how sorry they might look in the weeks previous when they play OU. It's just a lot different. We've heard that a lot throughout the years, but I guess, you know, maybe if you're a true freshman or a red shirt freshman, that type of moment can only happen in a game like last week.
Yeah, but you know, nobody cares about the excuses or, you know, that you're close. They just want you to be there. Like, you got to stop saying that you're close, especially when you're not playing well. But Texas Tech coming up this weekend. They have fired Matt Wells as their coach. Sonny Cumbie will be taking over. And the interesting thing about that is going to be to see exactly how they play this thing. Do they come in here trying to get a win? Or do they come in here just willing to just set off every firework in their arsenal? The teams that have had a chance against Oklahoma have mainly been the teams that have tried to control the ball and control possessions. And here's the other thing, too, guys. Feel free to jump in here. But when you start talking about how your games have been weird because there have been so few possessions, that's kind of your fault, too, because the defense can't get off the field on third down.
Yeah, you know what a good way to get off or to not have a team go on a 14-play drive is? Maybe force a 3-and-out. That could be a good place to start. I know that people are frustrated. I'm just as frustrated having watched all of it. But it is like, it's an amazing dynamic here. And, you know, Carrie, we talk about it in the mornings and stuff. It's just the way that people have talked about this team and the way that we kind of view this team, you would think that they are 2-6, not 8-0, and literally on the longest winning streak in the country at 16 games. It's hard to imagine that they have won 16 games in a row, considering everything that we know. Like, it just doesn't feel like it.
But, I mean, people aren't dumb, though. I mean, they see the college football shows, and they see that, you know, people don't have any respect for Oklahoma, and they hear them talk about how the defense is still not any good, which, how much time did we spend in the preseason defending that this defense was not the same defense anymore? And it's the same defense! It's the exact same defense that's always been!
Even crazier, Josh, is the fact that we spent so much time even 5 weeks ago after the West Virginia game, or 4 weeks ago after the West Virginia game, talking, God damn, what's wrong with this offense? But at least the defense can get stops.
I keep comparing it to, like, it's almost like a game of tug of war, and the defense was like, okay, we've pulled the rope for long enough. We're going to let the offense do the lifting for a little while. Like, as soon as the offense became functional, the defense was like, we're good here. We carried it for the first half of the year. We'll come back around a little later. We're just tired. But the guys, I heard the Lincoln Riley comment on, oh yeah, the young guys, blah, blah. There were four guys that were sophomores or younger on OU's defense that played more than 20 snaps. Don't put that on the, that's bull. I don't buy that at all. If that's a, yeah, there were more than just young guys that were not focused in that game.
I like that.
I just
Josh
don't understand
is
what has happened. Like, I just we're a week removed. And we sat here and they talked about, you know, Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch before the Kansas game, the week of the Kansas game, a week ago this week. Just disregard that. We sat here and talked and listened to them talk about, you know, how bad the defensive line played against TCU. Those guys were non-existent against
Kansas. Worse.
Yeah,
it was.
Kansas.
Perry Winfrey had the worst grade on Pro Football Focus of everyone on defense.
Guys, I put it up on the board, but, I mean, you know, Perry Winfrey, as much as everybody talked about the guy going into at the beginning of the year, and I understand he's getting double-teamed at some points, but over the last four games, he has one sack, 2.5 tackles for loss, and one quarterback hurry. That's not good enough.
Bob touched on it, and I don't mean to jump away from Eddie's topic, but this guy, the number blows me away. Shane Witter got 8 snaps. You talk about efficiency. That all the dude did was make plays every time he was on the field. And you know he's going to get 10 this week. Key Lawrence, best defensive player on the field. I don't think it was even that close. We talked about it in the post game. If Deller and Turner yells back this week, he's on the bench.
Yeah, unless he's changing positions, which I like the idea of it, but it just seems like this coaching staff, and particularly on the defensive side of the football, guys, it feels like they are trying to fit a, you know, what's the expression, like a round peg into a square hole or whatever. It just like they're trying to continually make things work each week that we've all seen is not going to work.
I mean, it's the old cliche of the definition of insanity. Like, we're just going to keep running Jaden Davis out there. You know what Jaden Davis is. You know what he is. Like I said, some of that stuff I don't understand. I don't get it. You have to find a way for Keyshawn Lawrence to get 30, 40 snaps. Like, you have to. That has to be done.
I also just get the feeling, and it's just a feeling, that if they gave Joshua Eaton more of a chance, he would start to develop as well.
Same. I couldn't agree more.
You would. And I hope they didn't ruin
Billy Bowman. Yeah.
I hope he's mentally tough. And I mean, that's been rough the last 2 weeks, the position they put him in.
Well, and we know he'd had some injury stuff, I think, dating back to even before Texas. I mean, like, he was fighting. That's right. He missed it, like, most of a game, if I remember. I know I'm blanking out on that a little bit. But, he's been fighting some stuff. Yeah. So, in this game, wouldn't you put – we've seen Turner Yell play nickel, and he was actually pretty good in that role. Why wouldn't you leave Lawrence and Fields back there? Because we know Fields is going out there no matter what. Put DTY at nickel, and then give Bowman a week and just be like, rest. Get better. You're going to have 2 weeks to recuperate here, and maybe he gets back to full speed. And then you can kind of figure out what you want to do and where you want to go. But if you're going to try Lawrence somewhere, why not move Turner Yell into a spot you know he can play?
I would say this. I don't mess with Delarian Turner Yell, because if you'll remember, that first half against West Virginia, that's the best safety play they've gotten in 5 years.
It's true.
He had the pick. He had like 8 tackles. I think he led the team in tackles, and he left the game like midway through the third quarter or early in the third quarter. He still led the team in tackles.
Oh, we know what my perfect world is at safety.
Say that again. I didn't hear
him. What is it, Josh?
One of you.
I was saying, we know what my perfect world is at safety. It's not Lawrence and Turner Yell are both on the field, but that's Again, we know that's not going to happen. So I'm just trying to find something that is tenable within reality.
Can somebody explain that to me then? Just like, what is it that I am not seeing, you are not seeing, the fans are not seeing? What is Patrick
Tuesday, Fields? Wednesday.
What the f*** does that mean?
I don't
what
know.
What does that mean? And I'm not Alex yelling at you, Bob.
What did Alex Briggs say?
Yes, explain it, Bob.
Justin Broyles and Pat Fields are two of the best guys in practice. He said it again yesterday. I don't know what that means.
If he says it next week, I might explode. What
you're
going to
throw a shoe?
I will throw a fucking shoe.
As I said, the old Eddie would have thrown a shoe.
I mean, I can tell you what it means. Tuesdays and Wednesdays are their hard practices, so that's when they really get after it. And if you make plays in those practices, they feel like they can trust you to be on the field, and they want to send the message to guys that aren't playing hard on Tuesday and Wednesday and aren't doing well in those practices that you don't deserve to be on the field until you can show it on Tuesdays. That's what that means.
You're also sending the message the best players don't play.
But if you don't show up on Saturday, what good does it do that you showed up Tuesday, Wednesday?
And I think Alex Grinch has made the point several times. Like, it was after the, what game was that? Was it the Texas game? I don't know. It was one of those games. But it was, you know, he was mad because he put it was the Kansas State game. That's what it was. He's mad because he put guys in the game that hadn't been having good Tuesday and Wednesday practices, and they didn't have good games. And, like, he was trying to explain, like, you have to prepare, and we don't prepare very well. That's what all this is about.
Well, it's going to end up getting them beat, and then they're going to be left wondering what happened.
And, Bob, was it not Mukes that he was kind of pointing that out about?
Well, I mean, he did get burned, but I'm sure there's other guys that he...
or maybe he was saying...
Shane Witter.
Yeah, I think he was saying...
Was one of them.
I had to put Mukes there because the other guys haven't shown me anything in order to trust them.
Yeah, which has to be Josh Eaton, right?
Right, yeah.
You threw a safety in at corner on one of the biggest stages possible. And not just a guy that's making a position change, but a freshman. I mean, God... Like, I just don't understand, like, some of the decision-making that's going on. I don't think that they're idiots. I don't think that they should be fired. But it's like they keep looking for – it's like they almost keep looking for reasons to do something when the obvious answer is right in front of them.
I want to ask Josh this since he watches, you know, Monday Morning Idiot and stuff. Where does Roy Manning fall on all this?
You know, it's funny because I completely agree with what Eddie just said. Like, I'm not to the place where, okay, people should be getting fired. Like, I can't just forget 2019, 2020, where I thought each unit showed growth over time. Like, what he did with Trey Brown, I thought Trey Brown was just going to be a guy that ran real fast and now is putting together, you know, an NFL career. Like, there are things I like. DJ Graham's development has been very good. But this thing, and guys, I would say it's primarily in the secondary where you see these personnel choices that are hard to explain. Like, just like we've been talking about, there are guys where, I get it. I do. I'm sure it's true of most of us. In sports, I was an overachiever. I had to be the guy that was good in practice. I had to do those things. I wasn't talented enough to get away with it. So I love that side of it. I do. I get that you've got to be the practice guy. You've got to do that stuff. Like, I respect that. At the same time, if you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, just to be like, nope, we're not going to play the better guy because he's not quite as good in practice, man, that's not the image you're trying to sell to your team either. I get that you want him to work hard in practice. I get all of that. But if it's not close, then what are we talking about? Because I saw Keyshawn Lawrence make more plays against Kansas than I've seen Pat Fields make all season.
Isn't that kind of the same thing too, Josh, that we just saw on the offensive side of the football when they finally gave the other guy the opportunity and all of a sudden it took off? Like, everybody in that locker room, everybody on the practice field, everybody within the defensive meeting room, they know who should be playing, do they not?
I mean, that's my thinking, is that at some point it becomes toxic. Like, I mean, and I'm not saying we're there. The friggin' 8-0. Like, it's not that. I'm just saying, like, I mean, and that's what makes this whole thing so hard when you have these conversations, because it's in this weird world where OU's 8-0, but you're like, they just struggled with Kansas. Like, at some point, reality has to set in that what you're doing, if you keep on this track, you're going to lose games, and you can either fix it now or you can wait until people do have the, now you lost a game, now you can change this. Like, I've never understood it. It's something that I know coaches like what they know, what they're secure in, and they wait until a loss to be like, yeah, that deficiency is a problem. We probably need to address that. It didn't just become a deficiency when you lost. It was a problem that people saw for a long time. Josiah St. John, perfect example, years ago in that Texas game. It took that loss for them to be like, okay, yeah, that's a problem.
Well, the other, like you said, I think fans also see this. Like, if you can replace Spencer Rattler, why can't you replace Pat Fields?
Yep.
Or at least, Kerry, it's like, I think they're at the point right now defensively where if you're going down, you might as well try something new. I mean, it already is a shit product as it is right now.
Or just split the reps a lot more. I mean, yeah. Pat Fields and DeLarian Turner-Yell have played a ton of reps over the last few years. Like, what's so bad making it basically like half and half?
That's the thing that's baffling. Go ahead, Eddie. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna, I mean, it's the same group that, I mean, you listen to Teddy or whoever break down the games. They're having trouble lining up. Like, it's the eighth, ninth week of the season, and they can't even get in proper position, let alone get out there and make plays.
That's because you're switching guys' positions week after week. I mean, you're going to pay for that at some point. And
that's a good point.
Your zone coverage is definitely paying for it, because people just run wherever they want in your zone and no one adjusts to the receiver.
God, that last touchdown against Kansas, I could watch that over and over again. Just Stutzman's not deep enough on his route. Stutzman's a friggin' freshman. Like, fine. That's okay. Broyles is incredibly wide. Like, guys, you and I could complete that pass maybe 3 or 4 times out of 10. Like, that's how open that play is, and it's crazy. I don't understand it. But guys, what I was gonna say, I've said it before. The thing that baffles me is that Grinch is the substitute guy, and his position is the one position on the field they don't rotate. I don't understand that.
Yeah,
I don't
know
how. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's okay for you to take the heart medicine, but I don't want to take it. 100%. I mean,
it really doesn't make sense. It truly doesn't. And I have a lot of respect for Alex Grinch, because you look at what they were doing at the end of last year. I think that's what makes now so disappointing, is the fact that you know that this system does work. What they're doing and what they can do on the field, we've seen it, and they've played good defense. I guess I don't understand what's being lost in translation and why some parts of this aren't working properly.
Yeah, I guess I was wrong about having Thomas move inside. You have to put him back where he's natural, because that's been a noticeable change. They tried to go Isaiah and then let Reggie Grimes and Ethan Downs be on the end. And
I don't understand why they gave up.
Those are the two games where it hasn't worked.
And I don't understand why they gave up on other interior guys that seem to be making plays.
They have.
Stokes, Corey Roberson, yeah.
Playing.
Jordan Kelly. I mean, he played a little bit, but I mean, I think he had one offside. But still, you have a lot of defensive tackles that seemingly play pretty well. And it just the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden you're like, oh, we only have two. We have Perrion, we have Isaiah Thomas. Like, when did that decision get made? And is it based solely on the fact that they shut out Bijan Robinson in the second half against Texas? Because that kind of goes back to, you need to be making decisions even when you win to make yourself better.
Isn't it kind of perfect, though, that everybody keeps going back to that second half of the Texas game, and rightfully so. They played really well. They got him behind the chains. They made Casey Thompson into some bad decisions. He also missed some open guys. But at the same time, I feel like there's been a lot of celebration, within the walls of the Oklahoma football program because of that performance. But it's like, okay, well, do it again. Like, I don't know. It, like, they celebrate those two quarters when all the other quarters are shit.
You guys, something interesting, and I want to say, I know why OU isn't doing this and wouldn't do this, and that makes it does make sense. But with Texas Tech coming up, having a bye week, you know OU will try some stuff. You know, they're going to look at some things, like maybe we could do this, maybe we could move this guy around. Depending on how Jalen Redmond is with his expected return this weekend, why wouldn't you slide Isaiah Thomas back outside and slide – let him and Ethan Downs change spots. You're not talking about a lot of difference. Their listed weights are 9 pounds of difference. Like, Isaiah's already too light to be playing inside. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Ethan Downs is not a guy that you want to go put 40 reps on inside. But let him be in there in, you know, second long, third and long type scenario.
You're saying let Ethan Downs play on the inside.
Yeah, let Ethan Downs play inside. Because Ethan Downs, whatever else he is, Ethan Downs is strong. Like, I don't think... To me, his game is more, and I know everybody knows I've said this stuff. He's more tailor-made to that role than Isaiah Thomas is. And when you move Isaiah in, you're lessening yourself at two positions rather than we're going to keep our best end out here and we'll figure something else out inside.
And it's really weird that since Isaiah has been on the inside, those guys on the outside that were making plays behind him, subbing in, aren't making those plays now. Yes. It's almost like a running back where you have a starter and then you have a changeup guy come in. It just seems to work better when Isaiah is the starter outside. Mm-hmm. And then Reggie Grimes and Ethan Downs comes in to rotate once in a while. The only problem is there has been no production behind Nick Bonito.
Oh, well, it's bad. Yeah.
Do they need to put Clayton Smith's picture on a milk carton?
Is he hurt? Like, something has to be.
No, he's been traveling.
Josh, he's there at
really
every single warm-up. I mean, he played the first two games, and he just hasn't seen any time since.
I don't think that any four of us would ever say anything negative about Caleb Kelly. He's been a great asset to the program.
Another guy that come work for us. Love him.
Absolutely. But I mean, at the same time, it's kind of like the stuff in the secondary. It's like, we've seen what's happening. We've seen the lack of production. Let's give somebody else an opportunity. Let's see what they can give. And
I did not
it's just like
Marcus Stripling didn't
travel
until I realized all the snaps that Caleb Kelly did play.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense. I truly And again, I think the most frustrating thing is I think a lot of people feel like had they lost a game, you would be seeing some of the changes, because that's the same shit that has happened over the last, you know, however many years. It's like they have to lose a game before the lights go off and they say, all right, well, I guess we'll give in and we'll try something new. And then all of a sudden you look up and they're playing really well. So it's just frustrating. I think that's the biggest part. And forget trying new things in a bye week. They need to get better. Get better with what they have. They can't stop Kansas.
I like some of the looks they gave. And, guys, did it seem like in this game against Kansas, I went back and watched. God, that, and believe me, that's the most painful idiot I've ever had to do. That was hard to watch, especially that first half. I was like, this is just bad football. Like, I don't even know any other way to say it. But it seemed like their rotations this time were more centric on pairs. Like, almost every time I saw Agwebu out there, I saw Witter out there. Like, and I don't know if that was a plan or if that's the way it worked.
I think Brian's been doing that most of the year, though.
Then I may have just missed it.
And it seemed like that.
Yeah, I think they reached the point, I don't know what game it was, where it felt like they're really trying to get chemistry with certain guys grouped together and subbing in and out all at the same time.
The thing that I bring up is, at one point, Oklahoma had done some stuff where they had Agwebu playing on the edge opposite of Bonito, and Witter was playing just a pure mic. And that's when he came on that delayed blitz in front of Bean on that last drive. And you were like, that kind of works. Like, I like some of that. It kind of puts Agwebu in a role that he's very familiar with. I thought he had a pretty decent game. I thought that was probably his best game of the year, honestly. They tried some stuff in the second half that I was like, okay, I kind of like that. But it was just, I don't know. Like it's at all the positions that I feel like they don't have as serious of concerns over the long haul is where they're like, yeah, we're set here. And maybe try some stuff there. Maybe get a little adventurous.
Well, before it's like you said. Go ahead, Eddie.
Before the Nick Benito sack in the fourth quarter against Kansas, I'll say it again, against Kansas.
In the final seconds,
they had one sack in eight quarters against TCU and Kansas. That's just for a defense that is, you know, supposed to make its name and kind of its bread and butter is making chaos in the backfield. That's embarrassing.
Well, and it's like you said, I think you said this on the postgame pod, Josh, like, you're Oklahoma. Why not play some man? Like, why not change it up a little bit and put your players on their players and just see who's better? Because we know who's better.
If they're not playing better, then that tells us something, too. I mean, yeah. That because it's talent's not the issue. Your third string Kansas would happily trade for. I don't think there's any question that Ralph Rucker could get some snaps at Kansas. So, you know, that stuff's out there. But, guys, one of the best plays I saw the whole day from the defense, they play Latrell McCutchen, let him play press, and they try to run a little slant in front of him. And he does, I mean, like, NFL textbook stuff. He comes around from the side, reaches his inside arm in, gets the ball out, and it's an incomplete passage. And it's simple. It's nothing crazy. But when you're playing that shaky on defense for the last month, you notice stuff like that. You're like, well, that's how you're supposed to play that. That's perfect. And Latrell McCutchen got 8 snaps or 10 snaps or something. So whatever. Like I said, it's just that's the thing I can't get my head around are the personnel decisions. Some of the other stuff I think is okay, but it just feels like OU's like, well, we're going to sink with the ship we know. Rather than let's see if, you know, maybe we can float with somebody else.
And like I've already said, it feels a lot Mike Stoopish in that Stoopsish. Mm-hmm. Stoopsish. He has my phone number still.
He has a better defense than Oklahoma.
Yeah, so he does.
He's the one that's laughing.
But it feels like okay, they're so overly concerned about getting beat over the top that they are just letting people run wild in front of them and complete passes left and right. Hey, as long as we don't give up a one play 75-yard drive, we're happy with giving up a 14 play drive. Like, we're going to be bend and break. Well, you're just bending and you're just breaking. You're not bending. Like at some point bend and break, bend but don't break. You have to break. I mean, you have to not break.
But yeah, you have to make the stop inside the 20.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to force field goals.
You have to get them off the field on third and 9.
You have to get Kansas off the field on third and 9.
I mean, maybe don't always just try and play it safe. It doesn't work around here on defense. It never has.
The more I thought about it after the game on Saturday, I thought about this driving back. I thought about literally driving off I-35, by the way, on the way home. But the 14-play drive was embarrassing to begin the game. The 10 and 12 play drives were pretty embarrassing. I thought the most embarrassing drive of the entire night was when they go up by 12 finally, and you can get that sense of relief. And I think
they just throw it right down the field without uncontested.
75 yards, just untested, no care in the world. Jason Bean looked like he was literally on a Thursday, like high school practice, where you go out there and you're just running everything on air. Like the walk.
No, you're right. That was the most embarrassing drive. Yeah.
I mean, my God, have a little bit of respect for yourself.
And you almost had to think Kansas offensive coordinator was like, shit, we should have been doing this the whole game. Their secondary sucks.
It's incredible. I just like at some point, and it was kind of my question to Lincoln yesterday. It's like, is it more embarrassing that this happened against Kansas? And if that doesn't get anybody's attention, like, what is going on? I thought this group had a little bit of pride in what they're doing.
It's got to be hard, too, because there's so many fingers that can be pointed.
It's like I said in the post game, guys. Like, it's not one guy every time. It's he busted. Nope, now he busted. Now he's wrong. Like, it'd be easy if you could just, I mean, I know we kind of make it sound like that. Like, oh, if you just fix Pat Fields or you fix Justin Broyles. It's not that. There are plenty of plays. Justin Broyles and Pat Fields are fine. It's just that it's always somebody. It's never, hey, we got a whole series here where Oklahoma did what they were supposed to do. It doesn't seem to happen.
I think Teddy, he does a student review thing every Monday morning with us. And he put it best when he said, it was so bad. I would like to pick out individual plays, but it was so bad. It was all bad. There is literally not one play that you could say, yeah, that was okay. Like, it was just ineptness at its finest. It was terrible. It was fucking awful.
It was so bad that we're still angry on a Wednesday.
This is a very angry pod.
The further away we get from the game than I was on Saturday, because it doesn't anger me, but it just, like, it angers me that I don't know what the problem is. I truly, like, can't point to one thing and say that's it. It's like it truly doesn't make any sense that this group is so bad defensively when you know that they can't play at a pretty high level. And I don't think that it's just getting, like, do I think Jalen Redmond coming back is going to help? Obviously, he was better when they were in there. Do I think getting Dellar and Turner Yell back to a certain extent? Probably. But I don't think that that solves everything.
Doesn't solve your corner issues.
No. Need DJ back.
And I think that, like, that's a situation that he should be back. I mean, doesn't everybody kind of agree?
Yeah, I had thought he was actually going to be in Lawrence.
Oh, no. The whole thing is just, it's kind of crazy.
All right, time for a Dead Soxy timeout. We want to remind you guys, DeadSoxy.com, a great sponsor of the pod. Got the brand new OU collection, or the Oklahoma collection, that's out now. Go check it out on the website, DeadSoxy.com. The weather's getting cooler. It's time for you to get some longer socks, and the no-shows have been great throughout the summer for all of us. But you use that promo code Boomer and you'll get 20% off of your total order. And like I said, a lot of Oklahoma collection socks for you to have for game days, or just to wear to work, or special occasions, or just to piss off your OSU friends. However you want to do it, you do it. But you'll be doing it in comfort and style, as our own Josh McQuistion now knows, because he just received his care package from Dead Soxy recently.
I did. I got all a lot of OU, very red heavy, very red centric. I'm going to have to find some red suits to tie into all of it, but I'm willing to do it because they are comfortable. So I have, wearing them around. The girls are trying to wear them around as often as possible, but that's a whole different disaster.
The girls are trying to wear them?
Yeah. You know, for my size feet, it goes up to, you know, basically the girl's thigh. So they just kind of run around and fall down. But they're, you know, they like them because they're warm and they're comfortable. So they enjoy it quite a little bit. But yeah, no, some awesome looking stuff. Kind of Oklahoma centric, some OU stuff, got some stuff with a schooner on it. But you know, just nice dress socks. Super, I needed an overhaul in that department, so it has worked out nicely for me.
I think we all do. So go to deadsoxy.com, click on that promo code Boomer, or put in the promo code Boomer, and you'll get 20% off of your complete order. So go check them out, deadsoxy.com. Great sponsor of the Unofficial 40 Podcast.
And I don't know if you guys are ready for my hottest take.
Oh, no.
Mm-mm.
With all that said about the defense, I'm still kind of worried about what the Iowa States, Baylor, and Oklahoma States of the world throw at this offense. Because the first half, they were flat out confused. I mean, I know they only had 17 plays in three series. And you look at even the fourth quarter when you're trying to execute a fourth and one, which they didn't. Caleb Williams didn't necessarily just, I mean, he was great. The play that he made saved the game. The run on the other fourth and one obviously gave him momentum, but at the same time, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm worried about Caleb Williams overall. I don't know. These next four games are
I will say this. I mean, and I know you don't really want to rewatch the game, but back-to-back 15-yard penalties on the offensive line was just disaster. What was it, third and 24, third and 27 well,
they had
or something?
It second and 37 before the target.
Yeah, second and 37 is how bad it got. Yeah.
I think they're finding stuff in the passing game.
They had a third and goal from the 37 in 2020 against Kansas.
The thing that was weird is just that Kansas's their defense is ranked so terribly, and they couldn't do anything running the ball on them. I mean, to get stuffed multiple times, and I don't think the offensive line was just terrible, but they couldn't push Kansas around. That's alarming.
That is.
And that felt like a game for Eric Gray, maybe.
It really was, yeah.
Instead of Kenny Brooks.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Like I said, I think they're finding some stuff through the air, but man, I don't know. The offensive line is so improved from what we saw early in the year that I think it's clouding people that are like, oh yeah, now it's all good. I'm like, don't get too crazy. Like it's better, but I look at them and then I look at them going against, I mean, forget playoff teams, but Iowa State, Oklahoma State, things like that. I'm like, okay, let's see how they do with, you know, Trace Ford and some of these guys that these schools have coming off the edge.
Does Eric Gray remind anybody else of Daniel LaRusso? Daniel LaRusso only had the crane kick. Oh, Eric Gray only has that one little move where he puts his foot in the ground and then goes the other direction. Like he does that to everyone. He sets everyone up. I think one time, like, DeMarvion Overshown just nailed him trying to do it. But, like, he gets away with it every time. But he only has one move. He has one thing that he does. And it works. But it's like, okay, you got the crane kick. We get it.
I really like that they threw that little quick bubble screen out to him, and then he had a nice little run off of it. It felt like, okay, we're going to cut out the whole middleman of the read and the handoff and you having to make decisions. We're going to get it to you on the corner, which is what we want to do from the start, and then we're just going to let you play. Like, that felt like we're cutting out the middleman here. We're going to make this as quick as possible and let you get in space.
Also,
few plays this season they've had Gray and Brooks on the field at the same time.
Yeah,
and I thought that nice little wrinkle.
Is Trayvon West the best they could do for speed on that play too, by the way?
With Mario Williams out?
I guess so.
If Mario was available and they did that, then I would be pulling out my hair, but as it is, you're like, they're just trying to put bodies out there, whatever you can do. But, I mean, you know, it wasn't bad.
The thing was, right, he looked really fast, but he had no top-end speed.
Yeah, you could tell, like, his acceleration was good. He hit top-end fast, yeah. But then you're like, and then it wasn't quite there McGowan against Florida.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, you could just see him, like, they're going to catch me, right?
Well, at the same time, it's like Kansas. It's like, you should be, if you're the fourth fastest guy, you should be faster than everybody at Kansas.
Yep.
I don't know. It was a great play. It was a great run. Just disappointing.
Yeah.
In the end,
the fact that you had to break that out against Kansas is one of my biggest concerns of that game. Like, and I mean, it was probably done more not because, oh, we can't figure this out. It was more of a shot in the arm because I said it in the idiot. Like, they were 28-6 from that point on. Like, they dominated the game from that play forward. Mm-hmm. But,
well, let's face it. Mm. I mean, when you see a team, kind of cheating everything to the inside to try and shut down your run game, that's not a bad. That's a good call. I mean,
no.
I will throw myself under the bus because it's 17-7, right? And I go, what in the world is Jahleel Farouk and Trey West are your two receivers when you're down 17-7 to Kansas? I said in the press box.
Farouk's been getting some snaps here lately.
Yeah, he has.
He seems like he's coming on a little bit.
But I'm looking for Drake Stoops, Marvin Mims, Jaden Hazelwood. No, yeah. It's West and Farouk, and they go for 66 yards.
Oh, God. Can you imagine Eddie in the end zone if that goes to Drake Stoops? Eddie, like, wouldn't even get video of it. Like, the camera would just fly up in the air. Like, it would just be celebratory.
You get no celebrations from me for beating Kansas.
Not even for your boy on a.
No, I think it's a top 20 most embarrassing game in the history of Oklahoma football, and they won.
Tell, like, that's such an embodiment of where this team is right now.
Yeah, they like, won it. They're, it's still embarrassing.
They're 8-0, and we've spent this entire podcast just shitting on them.
Kansas wins 29-28 if Caleb doesn't make that play.
Oh, I agree. Don't think that there is a single person out there that would disagree with you, Bob. I that's why – I mean, that's the point is, like, you're having to execute a fourth and one because you have no trust in a defensive product in stopping Kansas.
Or Kansas scores too fast and OU kicks a field goal to win. But they were Kansas was going to score on that next drive.
But, guys, we talked about it last week, and you do have to tip your hat to Lincoln Riley for being so creative in how not to use Spencer Rattler. I mean, it was a genius game plan he devised so that he'd have
go
to
go in there
that
and
question.
Suck, and then he doesn't have to play him in a blowout.
We're going
to
be terrible. I won't have to make this choice.
Yeah, there were a lot of jokes about this as Caleb's way of keeping Rattler off the field. I mean, look, it comes down to this. I understand why the fans are pissed is because, you know, you see people starting to talk about Alabama and Ohio State over you because you're not impressive on the field and your defense is not impressive. And once again, you were supposed to be up there with Alabama to start the season, and now it's Georgia and everybody else, and you're not even being included in the everybody else by some people because it's been so bad. So it's frustrating. People expected better, and they're not getting it.
Yeah, but at the same time, you take care of your business and you win every game, you're going to be in the playoffs.
Look, you have to win this weekend, but November tells the tale. I mean, it decides your season, it decides your fate. You have 2 weeks to get better. You have a game. You have your last tough practice today. Then you got a walkthrough on Thursday. Then you got one more practice. Then you play Tech. And then next week, you need to get healthy and get better.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
You need to find, you need to catch lightning in a bottle.
Oh, you fans need to be praying that Josh Eaton has a great day of practice today.
I just wanted to hold up signs
for him before he goes to practice.
Like, kill it today, Josh.
Josh, we
start
need you out there. We need you out there. Go kill it today at practice.
Today's your Tuesday, Josh.
What makes a good practice and what makes a bad one for Eaton and Bryson Washington? If they were bad in the first month, is it not clicking to not get better, or what's the scale that they're graded on?
Yeah, we're seeing Key Lawrence get better. I mean, he's one of the young guys that you're seeing him get better.
And it's almost like if you feel like playing time's available. Yeah. No matter how hard I work in practice, I'm still not going to get any snaps. Not a great reward system.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't look good, I think is what their point is. But you guys are clearly not buying into it.
I mean, no. I don't. I mean, obviously, I'm not there. I have to trust what they're saying. There's no reason for them to lie about that, because it would be easier to go with what everybody else is saying and play Key Lawrence or whoever else. But at the same time, I don't know how you just ignore what's happening in the part that matters, the part where people are keeping score.
And again, when they are keeping score, we've seen them fail time and time again. It's ridiculous to continue to think like it's almost like they're trying to make, and this might be a bad analogy, but it's almost like they have some guys that are in just massive, massive slumps, and they just keep putting them in the lineup. Like a baseball term, like there's somebody that is on like an 0-for-70 streak. And it's like, yeah, maybe the 71st at bat will be the time that he gets out of it.
Shoot or shoot, Eddie. Shoot or shoot.
It's insane. I truly just don't understand the ideology behind some of the stuff that they're doing. And like, again, I feel like it's going to catch up with them at some point. It caught up with Oklahoma State and their offensive struggles last week up in Ames. I don't know how you can't open your eyes and say, you know, at some point, if you, you know, play with fire too many times, you get burned.
They just need to go out and play well. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, all of this hand wringing and, you know, F bombs that we're dropping over it. They got to go play well. They got to do it themselves. That's the only way you're getting out of this. That's the only way that things get better.
And I think the thing that is like from the outside looking in, and we're not around there every day, so we just don't know. It's like, has the message been received? Like, you hear Alex Grinch say some stuff, and it's hard not to remember some of the stuff that Mike was saying at the end of that run, as far as almost just, I guess, self-doubt would be one way to say it. Like, you hope that that's not seeping in.
Yeah, like, because he's ashamed that he still has to say this. I mean, he said that the last couple of weeks. Like, it's embarrassing that I have to point to this, or that, like, I haven't been able to motivate the guys. And that's why I'm kind of leaning toward the it's up to the leaders. That's a story that I'll be working on for later this week. It's like, if you really want to help Alex Grinch out, it's up to those leaders to be the best players on the field. And as he answered with my question, take somebody else with you. Don't just be good for yourself. Make those other guys that are in your group come along for the ride too.
You got to know too. I mean, maybe part of the positivity thing with Lincoln is, you know, he saw what happened to that defense under Mike. He saw him push those guys to the brink, to the point where every time he got on someone, it went in one ear and out the other. And he probably doesn't want that happening again. I mean, he's seen it happen. And I think Grinch is a pretty intense person. I know, you know, just talking to Isaiah, just off the cuff stuff, you know, like, he's like, yeah, Grinch will get in your ass. Like, he's not afraid to just jump you. I mean, so you don't want to get it to where Grinch is losing his mind every day at practice. And the players are just eventually, they're just like, yeah, he's always yelling at us.
Maybe I'm too old school. And obviously, I didn't like getting yelled at when I was, I guess, affiliated with teams. I wouldn't say exactly playing, but
you don't like getting yelled at now.
Well, that's true too. Different podcast for a different day. I think that they need some of that though. Like, doesn't that just reinforce the idea that there is a soft culture in Norman, just as far as what they are about as a program? If you can't have a couple guys that can take getting yelled at and learn from the criticism or the instruction, like, obviously it's not working. They're in triple digits in pass coverage right now down there. Maybe they need to get somebody yelled at.
I just think back to, like, some of the great, you know, like, you think about Rocky Kalmus or Torrance Mosher. You think they wouldn't pull this crew aside and be like, this shit's unacceptable. Like, that, right. Like,
yeah, scared. Your teammates should be scared of you a little bit. Like, we have to do this, or Isaiah Thomas and Nick Benito are going to kick our asses. Like,
seriously.
I mean, like, that's the kind of thing I think you have to get to, that it's harder to get to these days when you have teammates that rob people, and then everybody's just like, "Hey, we still love you." There's not accountability is not a thing anymore. It's just not, and that's a problem.
That's the word that comes to me all the time when I watch this team. Like, there's nobody that, like, the rest of the team seems to look to and be like, "I don't want to let him down. I don't want to let that dude down. I don't want to let these guys down." Like, they all say the right things, but they're too talented to be playing at the level they are if they were concerned about disappointment.
And that was another point that Grinch said. It's like, we don't need another voice. You know, we've got a lot of voices. We need action. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you can tell that he's reached a very high level of frustration.
God, can you imagine? Like, you listen to us and then be him staring at it every week and knowing exactly what he's looking at.
And ultimately, you know, regardless of how much he's trying, it all comes down to what's the production? Is the message getting heard?
100%.
Are they improving?
Like we talked about in the post game, it's him now. Like, you can't keep putting this off on, you know, for the first few years, okay, these were either they were not your guys or they were young guys. Now, I mean, you've got juniors you recruited. That's you've got to. There's got to be some accountability there with him as well.
It just seems like it's going in the wrong direction, doesn't it? I mean, they are progressively getting worse instead of better. Which, you know, I think around here for the most part over the last couple of years, it's gone the opposite direction. By November, they're starting to play the best football, you know, that they play all season, and that is so far from the truth right now.
You know one phrase that I haven't heard mentioned in the last few weeks?
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
One of their catchphrases?
Yes.
Fido. Oh.
No.
I wish it was Fido. That we'd be in a better, much better headspace if that was. Championship November?
No. You know that's coming. Next man up mentality. You haven't heard that in a while.
No. We don't use it.
Probably because the next man never gets an opportunity.
Yep. Me and Eddie. It scares me a little bit that Eddie and I are this much on the same page right now.
Have your thoughts changed on Building 7?
It is, like I said, I don't know what to. I hate that I run back to this, but I feel like if Redmond and Turner Yell are back this week and it still looks the same, this is who they are. There's no other thing to fall back on.
It is falling apart.
I have said for several weeks that line has not looked the same since Redmond left. If they get him back and all of a sudden things start clicking again, okay, fine. But that's really your last remaining excuse.
What if that is the case, that it's just two guys? Like, I think that will be more mind-blowing than it would be if it's the opposite and it just stays the same.
Was it just Ronnie Perkins last year?
Yeah, like that's the thing. It's like it just doesn't make sense that a defense
They were so much better on the line the first five games than they were without Ronnie Perkins last year. So much better.
100%. And again, it's like I go back. I know West Virginia is terrible offensively, but you walk out of that game and you're like, well, thank God for Alex Grinch's defense. This team just they win differently. They win with defense. I know the offense is working through things and Spencer Rattler is going to be OK, but you could fall back on the defense. And now it's like just kick onside.
But guys, it's not just been the defense. I mean, it's been the start of games, too. Just the lackadaisical nature on both sides of the ball. I mean,
it's hard for OU's defense to force Kansas or TCU or whoever into predictable situations when they're not, you know, like when Kansas is up 10 to nothing. Well, what do we care if we punt? Like, you're not doing anything offensively. It's fine. So they don't have to get, you know, like 3rd and 7. Well, we don't have to throw. We don't have to do these things because you're chasing us offensively. So it's tough when you, like, when OU's scoring points and that opposing offense knows, hey, we've got to put some points on the board.
We've got to take some chances.
Yeah, exactly. You have to get a little aggressive. As it is, that's why Nebraska had all the success they did. If Caleb Williams is in that game probably goes very differently because Nebraska can't just sit on their heels all afternoon. But they could just kind of wait and let the game come to them. That was the problem against Kansas. The offense was so bad early on that Kansas could just play that game and they were fine. I'm not saying that absolves the defense because it absolutely does not. But it helps or it makes their life more difficult.
All right, we've gone over 50 minutes just griping about the defense. Bob's got to get out of here. But real quick, Bob, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. I know you've had some basketball stuff lately with Porter Moser. Josh, suck it. We're going to talk about basketball real quick before you got to get out of here for Zoom.
I'm just recruiting Josh. But yeah, been able to check out practices the last two Tuesdays. I like Jordan Goldwire a lot. I love the leadership he's going to bring to the team, the ability to be the point guard and drive the bus. And you know, watching Tanner Groves That dude, it just seemed like he's going to make the smart play every time. He's always got his eyes up, always looking to see, you know, what's going to be the best option to try to get the team going. And the intensity, I mean, we said it last week, but after going again yesterday, it's just night and day. The intensity is just so off the charts when it comes to a Porter Moser practice. And you can just tell he doesn't want to get outworked. You can beat him, but you're not going to outwork him.
Just Porter, I mean, in terms of dealing with him a little bit more, I know you've kind of got to be around him and just see him in the practice. I know Eddie had a comment about he heard an F-bomb in practice, and it was really bizarre. Or maybe it was you that said that.
It was.
Was that you? Okay, I can't remember which one of you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they keep them open practices, that type of stuff, if that keeps going, but... Yeah,
I mean, it wouldn't be shocking. It's just that you're coming off the Lon Kruger era where, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
Four-letter words did not exist.
So, but yeah, you can just see, you know, the goal is how quickly can you get a group individuals, a lot of transfers, a lot of freshmen, and get them to one cohesive unit. And I don't think that's an OU-centric problem. That's a college basketball problem, first year of the free transfer. How quickly can these teams come together at the Power 5 level compared to what you would think the group of five, they'll have guys that have been around 3-4 years playing with each other, and how does that contrast, and how does that all work out when we get to March?
All right, Bob, we'll let you get to the Zooms. Eddie, you're free to go if you want. Josh and I can finish up the recruiting portion of things.
I can hang around for a second.
Okay. So, Bob, we'll let you get. So thank you, sir.
You got it, guys.
Josh, home game this weekend, and really just two left on the season. How much is there for OU to get done recruiting-wise on game weekends right now?
Well, you're going to have a few, a few official guys each weekend. I don't think it shocks anybody that the most likely big weekend left is Iowa State. I mean, I think that's kind of what it's looking like. I know... Like, for example, Treyon Webb and Brandon Ennis are talking about coming in that weekend. I think they're working on some other 2023 guys. Wouldn't shock me if, like, Malachi and some other guys came in that weekend as well. So that would be a little bigger weekend. The interesting news about this weekend is Oklahoma has now offered a wide receiver and will bring him in for an official visit this weekend.
For 2022.
For 2022. It has happened really since... The Talon Shetron situation, OU fans have been asking, like, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? I've looked at a bunch of different guys, and I honestly kind of thought Oklahoma would look toward more of a slot inside, Marvin Mims kind of player, a guy that could play outside, but kind of has that speed and quickness to maybe, you know, work over the middle and do some of those things. They've gone with a Oklahoma legacy, Nick Anderson, the younger brother of Rodney Anderson at Katy, Texas. Actually going to get a chance to go see him this week. So the timing worked out pretty nicely. But big, long guy, 6'4", about 200 pounds, runs very well. I mean, you know, we all remember Rodney. Speed is kind of inherent in their family. So
you see their dad, you can understand. And their mom, they're both very athletic-built people.
I last saw them at that camp in Durant that we went to a couple of years ago,
yep.
Eddie,
yeah,
that
sure.
Summer one.
Sure.
Yeah. And his dad still looked like he could play running back for Oklahoma. He is a monster of a human being, but super, you know, just super nice, really low key people. But yeah, Nick is going to come in this weekend. He is currently committed to Oregon. So that makes this even more interesting, but you'd have to think, like I said, I mean, this is a family that they saw me in my Sooner Scoop gear and came up to me and talked to me. They weren't just fans for 4 years. I mean, they still follow OU. They're still interested in it. It means a lot to them. Obviously, there's a connection with Lincoln Riley. So I think you would have to think OU's in pretty good shape to maybe pull off a surprise here. Obviously, could stay a little closer to home than Oregon. So we'll see how that kind of goes. But I think it's Oklahoma just kind of looked over and said, you know, that they've wanted to look to the portal at receiver, but you can't just leave that to, because you don't know what's going to be there. So if you think a guy can help you, you got to go get him, and that's that looks like what they're trying to do here.
Just real quick on Nick Anderson. I would imagine that. I mean, do you envision that if things went as planned this week, he could flip as early as like next week?
That would be my thinking. Like, I mean, okay. I don't know why you take
this
trip.
Something that would like run out, and you never know.
No, I mean, and again, I haven't talked to the kid, so I'm basing this a lot off just the situation and kind of the history of how these things play out. But I mean, clearly, this is a kid watched his older brother play for Oklahoma. I'm sure there's a lot of affinity there. Again, they've got proximity on their side. Oklahoma has recruited Katy the area pretty well. So I just don't see a lot that would slow them down here. And for him to take the visit, it tells me he's at least willing to look. So,
not to mention this is a family and Rodney that he literally got engaged at the last OU home game. There's still a very much an affinity and very much a connection back to the program.
Sure. Sure. I want to say I know, cause I don't. But at the same time, it's not hard to envision Oklahoma being pretty meaningful to him. And I, you know, like I said, Oregon's great program, got things going right now. Crystal Ball's an incredible recruiter, but it feels like that's probably going to be a tough thing for them to hang on. Nick will be a tough guy for them to hang on to.
Outside of that, anything else that was timely to throw out there?
I had something in Woke, and I don't want to give away all of Woke. The Nick Anderson was a big part of of it this week, but there is there's some interesting stuff happening in state. I don't think it's going to happen, but if you told me OU offered two 2022 in state guys before signing day, it wouldn't shock me. I've got one of them mentioned in Woke. Another one we've talked about some before. I think there are some guys that are having really nice senior years that are catching attention. And I know, like I said, one of them's in Woke. The other is Gavin Freeman. We've talked a lot about him, wide receiver at Heritage Hall. Eddie is very familiar with everybody over at Hall, and you know those guys just couldn't speak highly enough of the kid. And I love what his makeup. He's one of those guys I would just bet on being a good college football player. So there is there's a lot to like in him. So it won't shock me if that's how it plays out. And I think Oklahoma right now is figuring out numbers, trying to decide what they want to do at some certain positions and who their priorities are. Like, you know, do we take two wide receivers or do we save one of those spots for a defensive lineman we think we might get? And so they've got to make some choices on stuff like that.
It goes back to the idea, and particularly with the two guys, and, you know, one of them that I think everybody kind of is very familiar with. It just like, it's one of those things and maybe this is just because I grew up in Oklahoma and I always kind of have an affinity for the OK Preps kids, but why would you let somebody like that leave the state and then you look up and all of a sudden, or stay in state and they're up in Stillwater, and in 2 or 3 years you go, yeah, probably should have offered him. He's an all Big 12 type guy. Like, why wouldn't you take the opportunity, or why wouldn't you take the chance on somebody like that that you know would basically die to play at Oklahoma over somebody that you don't know about and you're kind of taking a flyer on or taking a chance? I just don't understand the ideology behind that. And I probably never will, because I would always side with the Oklahoma kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to look at the year Oliver's having right now. I mean,
he is, Josh, that is the perfect example of somebody that you go, yeah, you missed that one. You just missed it because you wanted to take somebody that might be a little bit more highly ranked. And I understand, like, you can't do that for every kid, because then I do think you get in trouble. But it's hard to put on the tape of, you know, the kid that you're talking about in Woke, or you put on somebody like a Gavin Freeman, and all of a sudden he's down in Lubbock, you know, catching balls against you and making your life a living hell.
Yep. Again, I'm a big proponent of best player, but if all things are equal, I want the in-state kid, I want the Texas kid. Guys that get where you're from, they fit in with your – the majority of your team, they're regionally, they regionally make sense, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. Like, I like all those because you're also going to go back to those schools and recruit again. But, yeah, I mean, to me, the guy mentioned in Woke, that's an offer all day. Like, I think OU's being overly complicated about it. But I it does feel like they're coming around to that idea.
And not to mention that, you know, Gavin Freeman is a kid, too, that...
Recording in progress.
That...
that's Zoom.
Sorry. I'm jumping onto the Zoom. But he's a guy that he grew up, his dad played at Oklahoma. His family are Oklahoma. They are born and bred Oklahoma fans. You don't think that that kid would literally give his life to, and I know that you're not offering scholarships for a kid to go play on special teams, but at worst with that speed, he's going to be somebody that contributes to the program. Much better than somebody that comes here for 6 months and then ends up transferring out because he's not playing.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just... Stuff like that always kind of bugs me because they're basically screwing somebody that would die to play at Oklahoma. And they need more kids like that in the program right now.
Well, they recruited such an elite level at wide receiver. It's okay if you mix a couple of, I mean,
evaluated guys in.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to marginalize Gavin, but guys who absolutely get every inch out of their talent, like, that are just, you know, for lack of a better way to say, just overachievers. Like, that, Gavin is not the guy that when he gets off a bus, you're like, that's the guy I want. I mean, it's Jaden Hazelwood. That's the guy you're looking when he, like, that's him. That's wide receiver one. And that's fine. But you want all those guys you can get. You absolutely do. But I don't think it's a bad idea in a year like this where you're not going to get that elite wide receiver guy to go get this guy that is going to be bought in for your program. And, I don't know. Maybe on a Saturday in Lawrence, Kansas, is still dug in and ready to go play some ball.
A Drake Stoops-like guy. I mean, think about, like, Clemson.
Yep.
At their height, Hunter Renfrow, just how scrappy he was as a player, but also a really good player, is doing well in the NFL. But that's the type of guy you're talking about, somebody that energizes an entire unit.
Yep.
And you have, I mean, maybe that's a problem with the defense. Maybe they need a scrappier guy back there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they
went and got one in Danny Stutzman. I'm not saying that he's scrappy. I mean, I think that his ceiling is probably higher than a lot of guys. And maybe that's even a bad comparison, but that's somebody that I think of when you say, yeah, that guy would go rip somebody's heart out and then eat it in front of them to get a stop on third down and get a three and out.
I mean, I think Eddie's just saying he wants more white guys. I mean, that's what I heard.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as I said that, I thought about, like, I walked right into that. So I'll just go ahead.
I think Perrion's capable of ripping someone's heart out and eating in front of him.
Yes. Yes.
He is, but I think that's a different type of crazy. Like, I think that he might be somebody that just does it because he enjoys it, not because he needs to.
Yeah. Not for the, I want to intimidate someone on the football field. Like, he does it because
it's very dangerous territory right here.
Yeah.
No, well, I just, like, going back.
I know what Eddie said. There's no good way to explain it. You're right, but I know what Eddie's saying. Like, it's I think Perrion just kind of likes being wild. Like, I just,
yeah,
like, well, that kind
of, like,
thing.
I'd like to see him be more wild when he's on the field. I mean, yeah, whatever.
Yep,
it's all very disappointing. Back to recruiting. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I think we're good. We got the Zooms going on. We're gonna get to those, but. It was a nice therapeutic pod. Got a lot of stuff out there. We can hear the Zoom now. So I tell you what, let's wrap it up. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Unofficial 40 Podcast. We appreciate everybody for listening. Go check out our YouTube page at youtube.com/SoonerScoop. Also go check out the website, just SoonerScoop.com, and give us a subscribe if you enjoy the podcast. And, we appreciate all you guys listening. So, thanks again. We'll be back again this time next week for another edition of the Unofficial 40 from SoonerScoop.com.